James Carroll is a National Book Award winner and New York Times bestselling author of Constantine's Sword. Now comes his first novel in 15 years, The Cloister, a novel of the timeless love story of Peter Abelard and Heloise, and its impact on a modern priest and a Holocaust survivor seeking sanctuary in Manhattan. The name of the novel is The Cloister. It is published by Doubleday. James Carroll is a former columnist for the Boston Globe, a frequent contributor to The New Yorker, and the author of 12 novels and 8 works of nonfiction. Again, the new novel is The Cloister, and it's a great pleasure to welcome James Carroll back to the roundtable. James, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
My great pleasure, myself, Joe. Thank you so much.
Always nice to have you on the program. What brought you to this subject and wanting to write fiction and wanting to write this particular story?
Well, this story at its center is a story about the recovery of the old idea that God is love as opposed to God is the sponsor of war. The biggest answer to your question, I suppose, is that I'm a soldier's son who understood from my dad that war is horrible and must never be affirmed or turned into a source of meaning or human the accomplishment of human power. And my dad also ushered me into my Catholic faith, and I grew up at a time when the church had basically accepted the notion of the just war, and it took me a long time to understand that the entire idea of holy war is a perversion of the faith. So this story, Joe, is rooted in the beginning of that problem, which goes back to the Crusades. The Crusades, you recall, were the 200-year-long campaign to retrieve the Holy Land from the Muslim infidel, but it was also the time when, with the slogan, God wills it, Christians began to imagine that war could be sacred, somehow holy. It was a terrible idea, and we're not free of it yet. So I've created a story that takes quite seriously two characters who stood back then in the era of the Crusades against it. I think of the story as beginning at the threshold or the crossroads of a point when the story of the West could have gone another way. And the people who stood at that crossroads were Abelard and Heloise. Abelard was the greatest teacher of the 12th century, based at the university, what became the University of Paris, the cathedral school. And Heloise, his lover, but also his partner in thought, a woman who became the greatest abbess of a convent in Europe. And the two of them stood together. They're famous, of course, as having been lovers, a thwarted love affair. But my interest in them is different. It goes to the theology and politics of holy war, which they stood against. And I tell the story of how that happened. And then I jump forward into our own time, practically, the 20th century, and show how what was set in motion in the era of the First Crusades continued and was laid bare finally in the horrors of World War II and the Holocaust. So I've created a story about another man and another woman, Father Michael Cavanaugh and Rachel Vedette. She is a docent at the Cloisters, the magnificent museum, Metropolitan Museum of Art, collection of medieval art that's in the northern end of Manhattan in Inwood. She's a docent there in the Cloisters. Father Michael Cavanaugh, a parish priest at a nearby parish, wanders in, and that their encounter begins a kind of reckoning for both of them with profoundly unfinished business. Each of them has to discover in a new way the power of love to help us overcome what is lost and what has gone wrong. So it's that makes it all seem all too complicated, I know, but it's at bottom it's two simple stories of love and faith.
Rachel's story is fascinating because she really is looking into her father's work, a study of his work, and ultimately how this makes the connection to Abelard.
So Rachel's father, Professor Saul Vedette, a great Talmudic scholar, a Jewish scholar at the University of Sorbonne, which school is descended from the cathedral school where Abelard was a teacher 1,000 years before, or nearly. Saul Vedette, a Jewish figure, sees the horrible threat of rising anti-Semitism when the Nazis occupy Paris. And he realizes that the great mythic love story figure of Abelard has not been sufficiently appreciated by the people of France, who revere him, as having been a great defender of the Jews during the first pogroms in the Middle Ages, the time of the First Crusades. So Saul Vedette sets out to write a new treatment of the meaning of Peter Abelard, hoping to change the way French people think about their contemporary situation in relationship to the Nazis. But that ambition, not surprisingly perhaps, gets him in trouble with the Nazis. He's eventually taken to the Nazi concentration camp outside of Paris, Drancy, where his daughter pursues him to care for him. And they together go through the trauma of that horror. Rachel survives, finds her way to New York after the war, and still unfinished with the horror, takes up this position at the cloisters precisely because it keeps alive for her the unfinished business her father had with Peter Abelard. And when Father Michael Cavanaugh walks into the cloisters, she begins to instruct him in this other meaning, what for him is a new meaning of the story of this great medieval figure, who was, in the end, condemned by the church, partly because of his quite favorable attitude toward the Jewish people. So Rachel and her father begin a story that is the ground of the story she begins some years later with Michael Cavanaugh.
What does Rachel see in Father Cavanaugh? What does she see in him that allows her and gives her the idea to share her story with him?
Well, she's a profoundly unfinished person. She's wounded. She's traumatized. You could say in our contemporary language that she's suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. Unknown to Father Michael Cavanaugh in an odd way, so is he. And we see his story, which has to do with a very different experience, begin with the appearance at church one morning of an old friend of his with whom he has profoundly unfinished business, but he doesn't know it. It's at the center of his restlessness and his unease with himself. Rachel recognizes that in him, and they're kindred spirits. She sees it before he does. And she also intuits the relevance of this old, unfinished, medieval story of thwarted love and disordered faith, if you will. And so, partly to assuage her own unfinished business, but also in response to his, she begins to share with him the great new story, as her father would have it, of Peter Abelard and Eloise. Eloise is the woman who prompts Abelard's heroic resistance. When he comes to a tragic end, she accuses herself of having failed him by having done that. Rachel Vedette had a similar relationship to her father, having prompted his great resistance, which in the end led to his tragic death, which becomes the thing she accuses herself of. Father Michael Cavanaugh is a priest, and for him the priesthood boils down to the possibility of forgiveness, which is what he offers to his people and what he's in pursuit of for himself. Rachel, instinctively looking for a capacity to forgive herself, finds that in her connection to him. So these people, barely knowing what they're doing with each other, enable each other to move towards some kind of reconciliation and acceptance.
This quartet of characters, two historic and two more contemporary, how are they really? It seems that they're all ahead of their time.
Well, it's true. Abelard was ahead of his time, and so was Eloise. She was a first feminist. He was a first humanist. Together, they were first modern people. And it's really only in contemporary times that we can look back and fully appreciate what was at stake in their conflicts. Abelard warned against the theology of the denigration and demonization of the Jewish people. Well, where the denigration and demonization of the Jewish people led, ultimately, was the Holocaust. So looking back at Abelard through the lens of the Holocaust enables us to finally fully appreciate what he was saying. So yes, they were ahead of their time. Father Michael Cavanaugh has a intuitive feel for the abuse of power that has come to define the Catholic Church to which he's given himself. He challenges the bishop. He challenges the hierarchy. He challenges, in effect, the clerical culture. We live in a time in the 21st century when the corruptions of the Catholic power structure have been laid bare by the horrible story of priestly sex abuse. Without being anachronistic about it, Father Michael Cavanaugh in 1950 has a sense of the problem that is going to be laid bare 40 or 50 years later when the terrible corruption of clericalism is revealed for what it is, when not only priests abuse young people, but when almost all bishops protect the abusive priests instead of the young people. So yes, Father Michael Cavanaugh, having an intuitive sense of the corruption here, is ahead of his time. Rachel Vidette is ahead of her time in the sense that she, in effect, sees that all of these struggles that are defined in terms of religion are actually about something beyond religion. They're really about the basic human capacity to surpass the troubles and problems that are given to us, that we've inherited. And she sees in that capacity for human self-surpassing, she sees it in Michael, she finds it in herself, that in effect is what the meaning of religious faith has boiled down to for her. So a post-religious person in some ways, but that's what prepares her for a deep grasp of the true meaning of religion, which is a struggle, of course, that is very common now in this increasingly post-religious time.
And how do you believe the church is handling itself post the crisis within the church and as a place of solace for people in this post-religious time?
I'm lucky enough to live, to have lived through the church's great reckoning with this basic problem, and I'm referring there to the process that was set in motion by the Second Vatican Council in the 1960s. I'm a Catholic of the Second Vatican Council. In that profoundly revolutionary event, the hierarchy of the church began to acknowledge the church's terrible, terrible failure in relationship to the Jewish people. but it also began to reckon with the church's terrible failure in the way it has embraced power as a defining note of Catholic life. And it's trying in fits and starts to move away from that. You see it in the terrible complications that the church has with acknowledging the true equality of women, for example. The church is still profoundly committed to the notion of male supremacy, which is reflected in the church's terrible mistaken attachment to an all-male priesthood. For me, the great symbol of the fact that the church is, in its own halting way, reckoning with what has to be reckoned with, the great symbol of that is Pope Francis himself, who is not by any means a perfect figure, but because he's the first person to say so, a man who's profoundly at home with his own fallibility, we do see the possibility of, and the meaning, really, of the church's renewal. Even though I understand fully why so many people have found it necessary to leave the church, I myself find a great promise in the way in which the church continues to grapple with its imperfection and its need for reform.
The new novel is The Cloister. It is published by Doubleday. James Carroll, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
My privilege, Joe. I wish you well.
Thank you very much, and bye-bye. To you. Again, the name of the novel is The Cloister. It is published by Doubleday. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.